Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show. And welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host for today, Bruce Marable. And today we have a very special guest that's going to talk to all of you about how employees should be learning, all the things you want them to learn, the best ways for them to do that, and what are the outcomes that you can expect by introducing a new way to teach your employees how to learn the content they need to learn. So without further ado, please help me welcome to the podcast, Isaac Tolpin from Conveyor.
Woo! Hey, thanks for the intro. I love all the clapping over there. You got a big audience. I love it.
We do. All right. So we were having a little bit of audio issues, but it seemed like we finally have it squared away. So let's get this thing started. The first question that I always ask that our audience likes to know is, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
Yeah, great question. And it's interesting that we're in HR, isn't it? It's a micro-learning platform, you know, that HR is using to bring content to life. And I've been an entrepreneur my whole life, and we just really saw that there wasn't a platform out there that really brought content to life and aligned with human behavior. So Stephen Ryan and I decided to disrupt this space.
Got it. And exactly what does Conveyor do?
So microlearning, it's breaking content down into smaller pieces, but even more than that, delivering it also in a way that's humanized, in a way people love receiving it. So just think about, you know, human behavior today, where it's like a Netflix social media world. It's an instantaneous world, a reality show world. So, you know, if you're not catering to that behavior, you're not going to retain learners, you're not going to create behavior change. But if you do, really incredible engagement, incredible things happen. And so there's some key things to do right to do that.
So to prep for this call, I actually looked up the definition of microlearning, and it said microlearning deals with relatively small learning units and short-term learning activities. So to me, that sounds like lynda.com. It sounds like Udemy, Coursera, things like that. Is that kind of the same thing? Is that what we're talking about?
You know, I would classify all those things more as traditional training, because their videos aren't necessarily super short, and there's not much else to it other than the videos, meaning there's not very much gamification, engagement formats, things like that. And so while I would say that is more traditional learning, and the reason it's working is because it's cheap and it's a lot of content available. So people go there really for the content, not necessarily because it's a great learning experience. What we're doing is we're solving the learning experience and letting other people put their content in it, brand it themselves, use it in their company, but really bring it to life. And I think a true learning engagement system that's also micro-learning is more what we have.
So let's break this interview up into a couple of different sections. First, let's talk about what is micro-learning, and assuming that it's better than traditional learning, why is that? Then we'll transition into how does a company actually set this up internally? And then we'll finish up with what are the benefits of this and how do you actually quantify the ROI? Sound good to you?
Sounds great. Yeah, it's good. Good flow.
All right. So micro learning. Let's really dig deep into it, because I hear small units, but it sounds a little subjective in regards to how much time. So is micro learning a 20-second video? Is it a 5-minute video? If it goes over 5 minutes, I mean, I'm being a little funny here, but if it's 5 minutes and 2 seconds, is it no longer micro learning? What does that look like from a time length, from a unit standpoint? And then what is the biggest difference between micro learning and traditional learning?
Yeah, I think I'd like to start to answering that by just saying knowledge is a commodity today. Knowledge is everywhere. And you know, you can YouTube something and find it, right? So knowledge isn't the key. What the key is, what's king or queen nowadays is not just content, but it's how you, the experience people have consuming that content and if it leads towards an overall learning objective. So to answer your question, the shorter the video, the better. Like there's this thing that I've been talking about called learner trust. And there's several things beyond a short video. A short video is just a little piece of the ingredients that make this great recipe, okay? And so what you have to establish is learner trust. If you break learner trust, like almost everybody is out there, they won't want to come back to your learning experience, even if they love the content. Because remember, content's not the differentiator. What gets people back in is that, is it easy? Do I like the experience? And does it do a few other things I'm going to talk about? And so really, you have to establish learner trust and you have to keep it. And you have to do about five things all within 5 minutes every time they do a lesson.
So I guess the question that a lot of people are going to have as they're listening to this podcast is, what's really wrong with the way that we're doing it now?
Well, the stats are out. It's sub 25% completion of online courses in top universities. That pay full price for those classes. Large MOOCs, usually there's one, I won't say their name, but I know someone on the board, they get a 96% bail after the third lesson and never come back. So with dismal results like that, information marketers, they may sell it, but they're not getting people really consuming hardly any of it. And then those people won't buy any more from that information marketer. It's one thing to sell something, but you want to build your brand. And companies are boring their employees to that. That's where you actually get the highest engagement. The challenge is they're only doing it because you made them and they're gritting their teeth as you're doing it. And so it's the antithesis of the very cultures and employee engagement and retention philosophies and initiatives that you have in place. And so you want those to be in alignment. And so really the problem with it today is a couple things. First of all, nobody wants a video talking at them and that's it. If you just have a bunch of videos on a website, you've lost. They're not going to do that. The next thing is how you notify people. A lot of times you're using email notifications to notify of new content. And frankly, that's not how people want to be notified. And in fact, you're associating now with email guilt. The inbox is a guilty place for most people. And so they're always behind on it. And so as soon as a few of those reminders come through email and they don't do it and they're behind in the course, they kind of throw their hands up and delete all your email notifications. So that's not a great way to do it either. And it's not instantaneous. So another thing is that there needs to be gamification. People are used, they're addicted to this instantaneous response and being able to go through an experience versus just someone talking at them. So you have to give them experience. There has to be gamification. And when I say gamification, simple things like completion bars and, you know, I got achievement currency for doing it. There's a leaderboard where I can see how I'm doing instantaneously with other people. The other thing missing from a lot of training today is social learning. People like to be going through things with other people to at least be able to see that there's other people in there. And how did I answer a question based on compared to other people in an anonymous way? So those are some things to kind of let you know why it's not working. And then the other one that you mentioned is short, you know, micro. So that's the only part of micro learning that we've really dove into yet, but there's other ingredients to it, but definitely has to be short attention spans today. So that's a big key.
And for everyone who's not familiar with the term MOOC, can you define what that is?
It's a long time since I was thought about that. So it's massive online open courses, I think is what it stands for. And something like that. And it's basically a whole bunch of courses in one place that you can go and consume at your pace.
Now, when we think about corporate learning, specifically in the enterprise or small companies or any size companies for that matter, to me, it seems like we break those learnings into two different paths. One, internal corporate learning, where I'm learning about my profession or role, but strictly within the company. So if I'm at GE or I'm at a tech company, I'm learning specifically about what GE has me to learn or what this tech company has me to learn about the industry and everything that the company is doing. But then it seems that there's this external path. So if I'm in HR, for instance, and I want to learn more about data analytics, so I want to learn how to be a better leader, a better communicator, then a lot of the times I'm going to do that externally just because my company doesn't have the internal resources, skill set, or domain expertise to teach me that. Is microlearning good for both of those? And does microlearning also work for certifications where it seems as though you need a lot more extensive training?
Yeah, I think it goes both ways. I mean, internal training, the big challenge is like, you know, people, there's a bigger problem here. The bigger problem for anybody that runs a business is employee retention. And how do you retain employees? Because people are free agents today. Is they no longer just stick in a job because it's great pay and great benefits and I'm going to stay here a long time. It's they stay actually, the differentiator for your company is different things. And one of those things at the core of it, a lot of the data shows this, is there a good learning culture? And one of the challenges with the employee training internally is that you're not creating a great learning culture if nobody likes the online learning that exists. And you can't create a learning culture with event-based things, just having some classroom training here and there. The only way you can influence culture in an organization is if there's a never-ending positive pressure on the right levers that drive that culture forward. And if people, just think of anybody listening, think about yourself, even if you're the owner or a leader of a company. When do you feel the best? When you're making personal progress, learning new things that help you be better at what you love to do, and you can see a path to progress in your professional life. Now, there's other things on the personal life side of things, but we're just talking about professional here. That is when people are just fired up and love where they're working. So how are you creating that energy towards making progress and giving them opportunities to show that they're making progress so that new paths open up for them in the company? Well, the best way to do that is a great learning culture. And the best way to create a great learning culture is creating never-ending learning. There's always content being dripped out to them. The other challenge with, you know, internal training is that they often create training and say, here it is, go take it. And then it's conflicting with their priorities and all the other time. And there's all the hours of training they got to do. And so what's better is to, instead of tell people to go somewhere, drip it right to their devices in short periods of time. Like, imagine a world where every week there's two or three lessons and you get a text message notification and you hit a link and you're in it and it's a new lesson. It's under 5 minutes. It's gamified. You get points and you see it with your companions at work, the leaderboard. And you just do that, you know, 3 times a week, 5 minutes each. How much would you learn over the course of a year if you did that 3 times a week, 5 minutes each time? It actually accumulates to something really big, but the better benefit of that is you're actually driving your learning culture forward. You're creating conversations about best practices. And then you take another step forward is you make heroes out of your employees and you capture their best practices on video and you put it in and bring it to life in a format like ours. So that's really powerful. And the other side of things is the trainer world. And a lot of times they're in the trainer world, unfortunately, they have this mentality of, hey, I want to impact the world with my content, but I want to create leverage. So the heart's right at first, but then they realize, wow, you have to be a really good marketer to sell this stuff and get it out there. And all of the focus becomes marketing and energy becomes marketing. And the course usually isn't very good and the experience isn't very good. And then they start selling it and then they're giving people a bad experience and it hurts their brand. They don't buy more things from them. If you really want to build a brand and create an experience people love so they come back wanting more and wanting to buy more from you, and so the learning experience is a key differentiator in both places today.
And before we go to the next section, I just wanted our listeners to know, are there any either role-based training, industry-based training, or any other type of corporate training that is better suited for the training that we know today? Or do you believe that micro training or micro learning is the future and it's basically better for all people in all types of way that they want to learn new things or new content?
Hey, you know what? There's all kinds of learning styles. There are some people that are really open to large amounts of text just written out and reading through it. There are some people that just love to just dig into a long video. There are some people, but they're the minority. And most people, for all content, it's microlearning is the way. Let's just take an example here to get kind of everybody's minds on the same path here. Let's say you have a traditional course where videos are, say, 20 minutes each or 15 minutes each or something like that. I'm not talking about changing the content of the course. I'm talking about taking that 15-minute video and turning it into 3 micro lessons so they get faster completions and recognize sooner. And if they're busy, they could do a smaller portion and pick up where they left off later by in having completed something. So it's not necessarily less content. It's just breaking it up into smaller pieces. And therefore, that works for everything. I'll give you another example of a profession where you'd think, well, for sure, microlearning wouldn't work to train doctors. It's funny. I was talking to this head of learning at this place. They have like 11 hospitals. And he took out his iPhone and he shot a like 3-minute video of a surgeon doing a procedure. And then he put it into whatever they're using for their, you know, creating training. And the doctor was just dumbfounded. It was a game changer because it's like, whoa, that was so simple. You just used your iPhone and we shot it. I've been reteaching this concept over and over and over again for years, hoping someday we would do this. And you just pulled out your iPhone and did it. And now we have it and I don't have to say that anymore. And that was a crucial shift in that big hospital or conglomerate of hospitals. To where, okay, we need to take the friction out of the production. We need to simplify this and just get small pieces of content out on a regular basis so that we can, you know, be more efficient and effective.
That's a pretty cool example. Thanks for sharing that. So now let's get into how exactly this all works from an HR leader's perspective, or if you're an L&D. So one of the reasons why our listeners love our podcast is because we go into the granular details of not just the topic, but actually how to execute on this in an actionable way. So let's start with creating a learning strategy. What does that look like? And what should it look like when someone in L&D or an HR is thinking about creating a strategy for their employees to learn new skills or learn how to do new things to make the company better?
I think the first thing you have to figure out is you think about the group of people, how long they've been in the company and what's going to work best for them with the content too. And whether it's dripped out or is it self-paced, that's one decision to make. You know, if it's self-paced, it, you know, it might be because you feel like, well, these people are really hungry to learn and some of them are going to want to learn a lot really fast and they need to, for some reason, for their job to learn it really fast. In some cases, then you might want to make it self-paced. If you're doing ongoing training, you might want to drip it out because, it's not necessarily training that I need in a certain time period to achieve something. I'm just trying to nurture the learning culture and put it out there in a way that's easier for everybody. So that's one distinction. The next thing is whatever platform you're using to put it in, you need to have that before you design your curriculum. It's the big one of the biggest mistakes I see people make is they fall in love with some, you know, technology or something they're going to use, and then. And then they go start building stuff and then they start using the software later. How the software works is going to dictate how you make your videos and structure your content and all of those things. So I would definitely pay attention to that. Let's talk about video for a second. Some strategies around video. I really believe the more you put into editing and making a video look great, the more irrelevant you're going to be. That sounds weird, right? Everybody says scratching.
Yeah, it sounds very counterintuitive.
Yeah, it's very counterintuitive, which most real success is. So the reason for that is you put your 10 lesson course together. You make these videos amazing, like, and, you know, whatever you're doing. They're voiceover and you got all these images and, you know, all this stuff, right? And you do lots of editing and make it great. And all 10 of them, right? So, and then it's out there. Well, what happens when part of one of those videos is not accurate anymore? Well, that happens pretty fast. The speed of change is huge today. But then you kind of go, either you don't even realize it's inaccurate and all your millennials taking the course completely realize, and the moment they see something irrelevant, they just brand everything you put out as irrelevant in their minds. So it kills their hungry to learn. But let's say you do notice, are you really gonna go back and create a new video with all that editing just to fix that one little thing? Where are you motivated enough to stay relevant? The fact is most courses out there are already irrelevant. So the solution to that is you have to take the friction out of your production. I would rather the video not be as good, but relevant than amazing and irrelevant.
That's interesting. So are you saying, and is your argument that because most of us from a consumer standpoint are used to watching YouTube videos, you know, Instagram, Snapchat, whatever you use, videos on there that are basically shot from a phone. And although they're good quality, they're not TV quality, as you know, with the big budgets and all that stuff. So are you saying because we've been conditioned to look at that level of quality that when we see it from a corporate standpoint, we don't think, oh, my job is being really cheap on my training and this is okay because it's relevant? Do you fear, should a company ever fear that if they don't put in high production to the quality of video or PDFs or images or whatever it is, that the employees might think, man, you're making all this money and you're giving me this crappy content?
I think that I'm speaking from a paradigm of having the number one platform for engagement that exists. So if you're using some stodgy platform, then you have to make up for it with great videos. But if the software makes up for, you know, brings videos to life with engagement formats and things like that, that makes a difference. But to answer your question, yes, I think we're more tolerant of basic videos. In fact, in a marketing sense, if you were to take a really polished video and do Facebook ads on it, and then take a really raw, real video and do Facebook ads on it, which one do you think is going to do better? It's the raw, real one. Hmm. So, and I've seen that time and time again. And I think that we're in a reality show world. We kind of like to know something's fresh. So one thing you can say is, hey, we're going to do good videos, but they're not going to be perfect. The point is we're relevant and up to speed and giving you the very best information. And if you say that and your culture's like that, then now it releases also your employees to go, I want to come shoot a video of me. I'm doing this great job in this part of my job. Let's get it out there. And now there's less pressure when they're under camera to shoot those best practices. And you kind of open up. There's a lot of positive ripple effects when you release perfection and you're okay with good. Because what do we really want? We want more learning. You can't create a learning culture if there isn't enough learning happening. You will never have enough learning happening if you're a perfectionist with your videos.
That's interesting. I think I'll take that same approach to the podcast. Maybe I won't do any editing to this and see if we get more listeners.
Love it.
So you actually started to talk about the next question that I had, which is, what are the primary factors that an HR leader should be looking at when they're looking to purchase a learning management system? And so, it seems as though one of the things you were talking about already is the user experience, which not only allows people to have a better experience when they're learning, but also allows you to tell me if you agree, but even decrease the quality of the video. So you get two birds with one stone.
Yeah, you really need, it needs to be easy. I was just on the phone with a major company and we built a lesson in 90 seconds. And of course the video was already made. I just grabbed an existing video link and we whipped a course together. And I was literally saying, hey, a lesson together. I was saying, hey, it absolutely should be easy to produce lessons. It should be very, very simple. Because you have tons of other things you need to do. And there's a lot of learning training that needs to go out there and it needs to be cheap. So when you're looking, it just needs to be easy for you. You need to have control over content creation and it needs to be easy. It needs to be so easy to put a lesson together and put a bunch of lessons together into a course and deploy that to people. It needs to be easy for you to swap out a video or change content. You need to have control over that to just go in there and edit something if needed. Think about how many times features of products change if you're doing product training to employees or whatever the case may be, words we use, prices change, all this stuff changes. So you need to be able to go in and edit it. The other thing is it needs to be built for mobile and also work on everything else. This is a huge deal. The way you build software for mobile is different than PC. And a lot of the software out there, LMS systems, were built for PCs and now are starting to be adapted to make to work on mobile. And that doesn't work. So it needs to be built from the ground up for mobile, but work on everything. And it does need to work on everything, okay? I believe you've got to have the ability to do text message notifications. Even if your company doesn't allow that yet, it is the future, whether it's an instant notification from an app or a text notification or combo of both. There needs to be an ability to just in time immediately notify people of things. And you want to be on a platform that will be able to do that, because your company's going to change the rules. Trust me. The other thing is it needs to have lots of engagement formats. So you've got to have the ability to put less pressure on the video and then ask a question afterwards and let them drag and drop something 1 to 10 and rate something, or do a poll question or a challenge question where there's wrong answers and they keep choosing till they get it right. And then if you really want the people loving this, it needs to have gamification. There needs to be a leaderboard and points and things like that too. So there's some things to look for. And a lot of RFPs are looking for the wrong things. And a lot of RFPs are a joke, because they were made by somebody in the company that was looking at some LMS system and they built it for that LMS system. Get your thinking away from LMS. I actually believe LMS is a bad word, or a bad acronym, bad combination of words, learning management system. That's why I refuse to call us an LMS, because we're a learning engagement system. Can you manage your learners and have dashboard with stats and all that? Yes. But what's the focus? The focus is on engagement, because that needs to be your focus. You need to create training that's in alignment with the culture and the employee engagement strategies you have in place, not something that takes away from it.
Interesting. So now that I've come up with my strategy, I've figured out what system I want to use based off of being user-friendly. I know that it's mobile. I know that the user experience is amazing. How do I get buy-in from my CEO, CFO, whoever I need to get buy-in from, to say that we need to invest in this? What's the ROI that I'm pitching to the other executives? What is the expected outcome that my executives will resonate with to say, oh, this makes a lot of sense, because it's going to allow either the employees to do X or the company to do X?
Yeah, absolutely. So, first of all, put yourself in their shoes. So anytime you're trying to sell somebody something, you have to put yourself in their shoes. And they will care about things that are different priority than maybe what you care about. And the things that a CEO or COO, chief people officer, will care about is employee productivity, which goes with employee performance, and retention of employees, because whenever you lose an employee, there's a huge cost to retraining them. And the return on investment that comes from higher employee performance and retention. And those are the things that are going to fall in line with the jurisdictions they have to care about. And what you care about maybe as an HR person is, and it's not that they don't too, but what you care about is the people. You're like, I want my people to have a great job here and have a great experience and make progress. And so you care about the different things, but maybe from a different angle. So you have to vocalize things in terms of what they have to care about. And then as far as don't try and change too much too fast, unless you're a really progressive company. One of the things about ConveyYour is it can integrate with an existing LMS and bring it, it can kill boring with that LMS and bring it to life. It can be, potentially be embedded into LMS systems, or it can stand alone as its own solution. So a lot of our customers will start by selling the idea of doing a test, building something in microlearning over here while not changing everything else over on the other side of things, and trying it in some easy spot to try it. And then they'll see how engaged their people are, and then maybe they'll switch later. Or they integrate it with their existing LMS and bring it to life and just stay down that path, or later change over to our platform.
All right, and then lastly, let's get into what are we doing once we roll this out and some of the metrics behind usage. So let's start with rolling it out. What's the best way that you think HR leaders should roll out this new learning engagement platform? What's the best way to market it to internal employees? And ultimately, what's the best way to get people to not only do it, but to actually follow through the entire system?
Some really easy first use cases are reinforcing your live training. How much do people remember and implement from live training? Well, it's almost nothing. It's very small. So Now you can reinforce something that you're already doing, already investing in, and see the difference, because you already know what kind of, you have a pretty good sense of what kind of implementation is happening right now. And then you could do an assessment afterwards of, you know, what has gotten better after they implemented the same live training, but with now micro learning afterwards. So that's just a great scenario. Also, look for the lowest hanging fruit, biggest opportunity. So what are we already have content for, and what can we easily try where we can get buy-in from that group of people and get good feedback on and actually measure? And it's obviously, it's got to be an area where we're going to pick some metrics we can measure.
So let's talk about if there was no training before. So no live training. I'm thinking about the HR leader that's listening now and saying, okay, Isaac, everything that you said was great, but I'm so damn busy and overworked with all the things I'm doing. I can't imagine sending out this email and, similar to our engagement surveys, having to hound people all the time, please start the training, get through the training, and constantly reminding everyone to get through the training so that I know that they actually have received the proper education that they need to do their job. So how do I go about doing that?
Well, you pick one group and you just announce to them, hey, we're going to launch a new way of training. And, you know, you have to decide if you're going to use work computers or use their mobile devices. We're seeing nobody cares about using their own mobile devices. And you build it and you launch it. And then you, within our software, you can ask for feedback. You could ask them to rate this experience 1 to 10 on a bunch of different levels. One of the things you can do to see how it's working, to improve how it's working, is you could ask the same questions at the beginning about something, about their job or how they're feeling about things. And you could ask those same questions at the end of the period of time they went through the course. And you can see how the data changes too.
Now, should I, and do you see this as a best practice to make the training mandatory? So, I don't know, something bad happens or you get a write-up or something if you don't take the training, and maybe that's more an hourly employees versus white-collar jobs and more corporate positions, but is it you take this or something will happen? And if it's not going to be mandatory, then what is an acceptable completion rate and percentage of people actually going through the training that you've seen that I should be happy about?
It's a great question. And I think that depends on your organization. Every organization is at a different point with culture and health, with their people and at, in that learning. If the learning culture is strong, then I would make it optional, because within it is motivation to continue with peer pressure, positive peer pressure with the leaderboard. If somebody's not doing it, everybody else is going to see that they're not doing it because they're not moving up in the leaderboard like everybody else. So there's some internal gamification that makes that really work when it's optional and people are into it. If it's a culture where people really aren't into it, I'd probably make it mandatory at first until I get to a great learning culture and I start making it optional. You know, at Capital One, Marriott, and Coke, these are big company examples, but it translates down. They had a live training happen, and then they launched a 30-lesson course, same one in all those companies, the trainer did, and Capital One got 100% completion. Coke and Marriott were 76-77%, and they were optional. But I think what he had going for him there is he trained them first in live training, so that kicked it off. So, and he launched what it was from live training, and they were impressed with him, and they enjoyed his live training. And so when they launched it, that really worked. And so I think if you're launching it without live training and doing that, I would say, here's something we're doing. And I would launch it like it's part of the job.
And last question in this section, what are the metrics, analytics, data that I should be tracking over time to know that either more people are learning or more people are going through the courses, or we're actually performing better as a company because of this? How do I tie a hard ROI to this? Because, you know, HR has a tough time tying hard ROI to a lot of areas of their job. So the easier that you can make this for them, the better.
Yeah, this is such a good question. And most things you can tie ROI to, and some things you can't. And executives always hate that, or even you say
right.
But it is true. There's some things you can't measure that are good and you can see, but it's hard to measure with people. But what I would do is, and this is different for every company, I would think about, it depends on the content of the course and in the positions people are in. And I would think about, what are the metrics that I want moved because I create this course? And then I would figure out how to assess where we're at with those metrics now to create a baseline. And then I would assess them afterwards, after you've gone through the course experience, and that's your data points in your point of change to prove it.
Got it. So now we're entering my favorite part of the podcast, which I like to call the real, the random, and ridiculous, where I ask you a real, a random, and ridiculous question. So are you ready?
Yeah.
So for everyone who's listened to this podcast before, they know that my real question is always, do you like bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
I don't think I like bread pudding.
Oh, man. Well, in the spirit of keeping the content short, maybe I need to end this podcast. No. Just Oh, man. I am a bread pudding connoisseur.
Well, that's awesome.
We'll not be meeting for bread pudding. Maybe we'll meet for coffee. It's kind of boring.
Coffee. Coffee's not boring. Come on now.
But, oh, well, you know what? I'm going to leave it there. I don't want you breaking my heart about you not liking bread pudding. So the random question, what do you like to, if I can use this as a verb, micro-learn? What's your favorite thing that you would like to participate in short, very short learning activities?
I really love innovation and how to become a better thinker about foresight, you know, predicting what's going to happen.
Got it. And the last question, what do you think is still the most ridiculous training or the type of training that we do today? I know in a lot of TV shows, they make fun of sexual harassment training or diversity training, but which training do you think today is not the most ridiculous, but that we still teach it in the most ridiculous way?
Well, the most ridiculous thing is anything compliance related that we're just putting people in front of to check off a box that we train them, but we don't actually care if they really know it or not. Let me just leave it at that.
Right. Yeah, we could talk a lot about that, but yeah, we can leave it at that. Well, Isaac, just want to let you know on behalf of the entire audience listening here, you nailed it. You killed it. Woo! It was an amazing, awesome podcast interview. Although you don't like bread pudding, but maybe I'll edit that out.
A minus.
So where can people find you and Conveyor online?
Conveyor.com, conveyor.com. Isaac Tolpin on social media. Connect with me on LinkedIn. Feel free. And there's a free sample on the front of conveyor.com you can take. And I'm happy to also give you, I created the micro learning webinar, and I'm happy to give you a link to that if you want to give that out to people.
Please do send it over. All of that information plus that link to the webinar will be hosted in the show notes and in this podcast. So listeners, thank you so much. And I hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you did, please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Also, just want to let you know, our company Employee Cycle is an all-in-one HR analytics dashboard. So if you're looking to bring all that data together and see it in one place, you know where to come. And finally, if you are not a subscriber to this podcast, we would love for you to do so. So please go on your favorite podcast player, whether that's on your phone or desktop, and subscribe to the Employee Cycle podcast. HR listeners out there, remember to continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.